Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here for the next 2 hours, and I've got my wife sitting here next to me. Her job here is just to filter out the truth. Isn't that right? Well, yeah. Aren't you supposed to filter out the... Okay.
Her mic is not on, I think.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why your mic is not on, but just stick with us here while we try to figure this out. Nevertheless, just sit right there. Don't go anywhere. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you have a question or a problem, that's the easiest way to get in. 602-508-0960. All righty. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nate is located up at I-17 at Pinnacle Peak. Nate deals with foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. Nate knows diesels as well as anybody I know that knows gas or knows alignments or knows transmissions. He's up there in the top when it comes to guys like that. So if you have a diesel problem that nobody else can fix, or if you want the very best I know to look at it, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair up in North Phoenix. It's worth the drive. Nate's a good guy, and there's a better, I'd say 99% of the time, he can fix what you've got. And finding it and fixing it, they go hand in hand. And I don't have a clue as to why your mic's not working, because I've got your input all the way up, and for whatever reason. Okay, go ahead. You got a lot to do. At the break, I'll see if I can figure out why it is. You know, there's lots of shops in town that are really good. Lots and lots and lots of shops. They know what they're doing. They can diagnose cars. But that process takes a pairing between the customer and the technician or the service writer. The customer has to come in and give us the symptoms. And under the very best of conditions, the customer can take someone for a ride and duplicate the conditions. That saves the customer guaranteed $50 to $100 worth of diagnostic time. If you can take someone, now you can't take the technician for a 30-minute drive, but certainly if you can take the technician and be back in 15 or 20 minutes, that is valuable time for the customer. I know in my shop, there's going to be we're not going to bill for that time. It's just going to be, wow, you helped us determine the pull, determine the knock, determine the clunk, the hesitation, the transmission holds second gear longer than the rest. All that kind of stuff is important. So we talk to the customer. Everybody should do that. And if your shop doesn't talk to you, then you should find another shop. So we have an interchange of what's it doing. Now, ladies, your husband's going to want you to go in and tell him what he thinks it is. And my suggestion to you is let that go in one ear and out the other. It's going to be really easy to pull that off because you do that anyway. So just go in and tell them the symptoms. My car won't start. And they're going to ask you, does it mean it won't crank over or it won't catch in the motor running? You see the difference there? The difference is really simple to me. But people will come in and say, my car won't start. And the technician or the service rider will say, okay, fine. But it won't start. Are we working on the starter to crank the engine over? Or are we working on fuel and spark in order to get the engine to run? So if I could train everybody in the world to say, my car will crank over, but it won't run. Or my car won't crank over, and all it does is click, 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 and I don't hear the rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr when I hit the key to try to start the car. Communication is pretty important, and it's really not the responsibility of you. It's the responsibility of the service writer to reach into your head and get all of this information. So it's important that happens. The problem with our industry is we get sometimes tied up in trying to look into the future. So a guy takes his car to a shop, and he has a coolant leak. And they think that he's told that they're pretty sure the coolant leak is coming from the head gaskets. So we have to take the top portion of the motor off. They say you have 200,000 miles on your car, and it's probably better for you to just go ahead and put a $15,000 motor in the truck. It's a diesel motor, by the way. So he's asking different questions, and he just gets an uncomfortable feeling because they're saying, you need head gaskets, and we're going to go in there, but the possibility exists that when we go in there, we're going to find a big mess, or we're going to find something that would suggest that it's better to replace the motor right now. So let us give you an estimate for the motor. So he does what I think everybody should do, and that's get a second opinion for two reasons. Get a second opinion with respect to the cause and repair, and then you'll get a second estimate as well. So those two things, and obviously if shop number one and shop number two disagree about the diagnosis, then the estimates are going to be different as well. So that makes a big difference. So this guy goes in and he's told he needs a $14,000-$15,000 engine. That's a problem for him. He doesn't like it. And actually, this truck had 297,551 miles, so it was close to 300,000. Folks, I'm not patting anybody on the back. This is a story that has a good ending. So he goes and gets another estimate, and the other estimate is between $1,000 and $1,500, and he's floored by that. He doesn't know why there's this huge discrepancy with the engine. Now, the head gasket job was a $4,000 job. Now, that's the high end of the spectrum. So I'm pleased that the other shop said $4,000 and they didn't say $2,000 and I'll call you when it gets more than that, because that opens up a wide door. So $4,000 is the top end. So he takes it to another shop and they diagnose it as the oil cooler is leaking. A $600 oil cooler. A $601.43 oil cooler. So they diagnose it as the oil cooler is leaking coolant, because we have oil and coolant in the same room. And you see, we also have oil and coolant at the head gaskets. So it's kind of easy to determine why that happened the way it did. So the shop says, we're in for this. We need to do that first, and we don't agree that the head gaskets are the problem, because for this reason. If the head gaskets are a problem, when you shut the car off, the cooling system still has 10 pounds plus of pressure. If you have a head gasket that's been compromised, then the cooling system is going to force that water into the cylinder. And when it does that, when you start it back up, the motor's going to miss until we get the water out the tailpipe. So that's one of the classic examples of a blown head gasket is, when I start it up, it runs really bad until a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And in addition to that, I'm adding coolant to it at least once every 2 weeks, or once a week, or every 3 days. So those two go hand in hand. So he's a little leery about this whole discrepancy. So he says to the shop, you know, what happens if you're wrong? And they said, well, we're not wrong, because it's leaking coolant from the oil cooler. So we need to start there. But this is going to be somewhere in the vicinity of $1,000 to $1,500. The cooler is $600. Then there's some ancillary parts in there, like O-rings and gaskets and a coolant pipe O-ring and a bunch of coolant, antifreeze. So during this process, and then they said at the end of the day, the labor on this, and I'm looking through the paperwork right now, is about $500. So he says, but we're going to come in somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500. So the guy says, fine. So they go in and they replace the oil cooler, and the whole bill turns out to be $1,331. And as I already explained, there's a whole bunch of O-rings and gaskets, but the most important thing on this whole thing is the $601 for the engine oil cooler. Then on the replacement part, they're going to replace $337.50 on the oil cooler. But then they had to do a crossover, and that's $125, which is a repair close to the oil cooler, but it was also leaking coolant, and the customer approved that. And then they have a flush and fill, pressure test, and drive, which means you flush the engine, you fill it with 50-50 coolant, and you go drive it to make doggone sure what you fixed is it. Now, in addition to all of that, the customer had them do the driver's door ajar indicator is on, and then he wanted them to replace the driver's door hinge and the driver's door latch, and he wanted to replace the passenger door latch. So on top of all of that was another $300 or $400 worth of work to take the doors apart on this $300,000 Chevy pickup truck. It's a one-ton four-wheel drive, and it has a diesel in it. At the end of the day, his bill on the oil coolers, $1,331, but he spends an additional $1,100 on a bunch of cosmetic stuff. So his ticket out the door at the end of the day was $2,701.77. The real issue here is he got two diagnoses and he got two estimates. And all he had to do was look the second shop in the eye and say, you need to make sure you're right because I'm not going to pay for guessing. If we're guessing, we're guessing with your money, not mine. I'm not giving you permission to guess on this repair.
2 minutes.
That's what it really boils down to. That's the conversation that you have to have. And you have to look at them, and it's a very valid question. Are you guessing on this repair, or is this a firm diagnosis? And folks, that's going to catch a lot of guys with their pants down because they're not used to those kinds of questions. But the best car repair shops list that's on my website, marksalem.com, those guys know it. I know it. We all know it. So we're not opposed to telling you, yeah, this is a guess. I remember a shop that told me a story that somebody came into this car with a Jaguar, and the Jaguar had a vibration. And he spent 20 minutes of the shop's time telling him how many people he's taken this car to and what they said. So the shop foreman got involved and he goes, sir, I don't care. It makes no difference what they did to your car. This is something I always say too. It didn't fix it. So why are we going to rehash history when history was defective? So they take the car in, they fix the vibration, the guy comes in and he goes, I'm uncomfortable because your repair is like less than $100. And the shop said, it's okay. And he says, can I drive it first? And the shop says, sure. And he goes, well, I'm going to go to Tucson. Can I drive it to Tucson? The shop says, yeah, go ahead. So they said, if you come back from Tucson into Phoenix, if you still have the vibration just past Warner Road, just drive past it and call us and say, you guys didn't fix it. So you don't have to pay for it. We're sure we fixed it. You demonstrated it to us. We know we fixed it. But if not, call us and pay us a courtesy. I'm not going to fix it because the vibration is still here. And go by. So we expect in the next 4 or 5 hours, he's going to call us or he's going to stop by. 30 minutes later, he calls and says, here's my credit card. I don't have the vibration anymore. So those are the kinds of things that you can use to improve the relationship between you and your shop. And more than anything, improve the verbiage and the discussion and the conversation between you and the shop. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. Real quick, let me tell you about one of the shops on my best car repair shop list. And folks, I know all the owners of these shops. They have my cell phone, I have their cell phone, and we work together really well. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since the early 80s. He opened up his own shop in 1983. He's been around a long time. He has ASE certified technicians. So if you're in the area of Deer Valley and I-17, he's on the northwest corner. He's been around a long time. And if you don't have a shop, may I suggest you stop by. Maybe make an oil change appointment and just see how you're treated, how you guys blend together. That's always a really good idea. So Action Auto Repair. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. Overheating problem, 1999 Nissan Quest, 240,000 miles, V6 engine. Blew the coolant out at least 3 different times. Start idles okay, so it doesn't show anything there. Where should I start?
Well, you have to start with the pressure test. So we're going to take the radiator cap off the radiator. We're going to attach an adapter there, and then we have a hand pump. We're going to look at your radiator cap, and it's going to say 11, 12 pounds of pressure. We pump it up. There's a gauge on the pump. We pump it up to 11 or 12 pounds, and we start looking for the leak. Whether it's in the engine or whether it's external to the engine, it's not that hard to find. Now, it could also be the heater core behind the passenger dashboard, and if that's the case, then the mat will be wet on the passenger side. Let me ask you a question. When it overheats, you probably add water to it, yes?
Yes, yeah, it's been filled up, so I know it's diluted.
All right, that's fine. How long after that does it overheat?
Well, it's overheated because it's blown all the coolant out. So
I know, but...
They filled it up, so...
I know, but Monday morning at 8 o'clock, you topped off the cooling system. When are you going to experience trouble? Tuesday morning? Wednesday morning?
Yeah, probably Tuesday morning.
Okay. All right. Why I'm asking you that is, and during that period of time, you specifically said it idles fine when I started up. Everything's okay. It doesn't run poorly. And your dipstick has probably got oil on it and not white foam on it. So okay, because you can go 2 days, you got a leak. You got a leak. Somewhere you got a leak. And it's taken 2 days for it to get to a critical stage, and that's when you start bubbling up and all that other kind of stuff. This isn't a hard situation to diagnose. You pressure test it and you walk away from it. You know, the technicians will go, you know, have a soda pop. They'll work on some other car. They'll come back. The pressure's going to go from 11 pounds to 4. Now they got to find the leak. Well, most of the time you just look on the floor. You can find the leak. You'll know, and you check the passenger side floorboard. At that particular point, then they call you with an estimate. They get the parts and the labor all situated. They call you with an estimate, and that's when you say, but here's the deal. How many times has it overheated really, really bad where there's steam everywhere and the gauge is pegged?
The kids usually drive it, so to my knowledge, it's only been a couple times, knock on wood.
Okay, and that's, you need to knock on wood for that one. If it's been severely overheated, we could have head gaskets now that were not, they were created by the overheat, but they weren't the original cause of the overheat. And with 240,000 miles with a V6, I would be hesitant to bid it, but I would imagine that you're going to easily be in the $3,000 to $5,000 range, and I am accounting for maybe a broken head. Certainly take the heads off, do the head gaskets, do the coolant, do the oil, new valve cover gaskets, adjust the valves, do whatever we have to do to put it back together. Now, there is one other thing. Mark Salem has a secret potion. And we've used this for head gasket issues, and we have been successful 99 times out of 100. I've got a technician who has a car now that he's 100,000 miles after we treated this car. Now, I'm not going to tell anybody else what we use because it took us 10 years to figure it out. But I think we charge 125 to 175. We have to rinse out your cooling system. We have to put the sealer in there. We have to wave a dead chicken around our head, honk the horn 3 times. There's a process, and we do that. And then we go drive the car, and that circulates our chemical. And frankly, only one vehicle didn't take it, and it was a little Suzuki Samurai. And the head gasket leak was about the size of Canyon de Chelly. It was huge.
Okay.
So we pulled the head off and we go, wow. I mean, the fire ring on this little Samurai, the fire ring was gone for 2 inches. Now, that's a huge leak. We ain't covering that. So,
you should probably do the
wait a minute. I'm sorry. I figured you out now. Go ahead.
He should probably do the
pressure test
first to make sure it's not a huge leak, because that stuff's not going to work if it's...
And the water pump usually leaks when it's running,
right?
So we don't see a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So when you shut it off, sometimes it doesn't show, but you're right. Now, what's a leak test for us?
45.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna give you a range, because it's not fair for us to hold every shop in town to 45.
Right.
I'm gonna say between $50 and $80 you're gonna spend money to have somebody pressure test it. So,
okay.
And that
right.
should be tax, life, you know, all that stuff.
Certainly. You're not going to give me the name of the top secret potion, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to let you watch us put it in either. You know, you have to understand something. It's something that's readily available, but here's the problem. There's 20 of them out there. So you can go try them all. You can use the salt and pepper one. You can use the liquid this. But it's taken us 10 years, and we've tried, I mean, there might be A and B and C and D, and we've tried A on 5 or 6 cars, and we tried B on 20 cars. So we've just tried, but when we found this sealer, and it worked, and we kept using it and using it and using it, and we've never had anybody come back.
Yeah.
Except for the Suzuki, and it's, admittedly, the Suzuki never left the shop.
Exactly.
Because we could never get it airtight.
And we didn't charge them for it, I don't think.
Well, we didn't.
It didn't work, yeah.
So the 125 or the 100 to 125, mm-hmm. We didn't charge them because it didn't work.
Right.
So what part of town do you live in?
We're out in Buckeye at Tartesso, the other end of the world.
Yeah, yeah, you are. You are. Well, the only good news is if you want to try it, like I said, and I also have rental cars for $30 a day. Now, it's not $30 plus $25 worth of taxes. This is $30 that includes everything, and bring your driver's license and your insurance card. And that's something that we can accomplish in a day. Now, if it doesn't, if our reseal doesn't work, you don't pay nothing. You don't have to pay nothing. Except for the rental car. Okay?
Okay. All right. We might have to just hook it out there to you guys.
Okay.
All right. I appreciate it.
Okay. You bet. Steve, you're up next. What can I do for you, Steve?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
On the subject of tire pressures, you know how you base it on the number on the door?
Mm-hmm.
But then you like to go a little higher?
I do.
Okay. If I take my car to one of those free air checks,
uh-huh.
How can I phrase that to them to let them go above the number on the door?
That's easy. On the side, here's, I'm talking as you, Steve.
1 minute.
On the side of the tire, it says maximum inflation is 44. And I know the door says 38, but I want you to put it at 44. That is the maximum inflation of a cold tire. It says it right on there. And that's what I want. And then you can, you know, you can fib. I have a buddy who's an engineer, a tire engineer. He says this is something he wants me to try. Blah, blah, blah. Just, but in, now, you're not talking about somebody who's going to put nitrogen in your tires, right?
Right.
Okay.
Just when you drive around, you see those, like, discount will say free oil, free air check.
Yeah. I don't know if discount will do it, but I think they will. And especially if the tire's cold. So we don't want to really mess with the air pressure on a hot tire. And if it was hot tire, I'd go to 40. Because it'll grow.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I do. I only got 10 seconds. You stay on the line if you have any more questions. And everybody else, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. 4 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me, flying co-pilot and sometimes pilot, is my wife, Renee. We've been married 472 years. And
we look pretty good for that, don't we?
They can't see on the
radio. I know, I'm teasing.
Anyway, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you real quick about the Auto Dynamic Shop, Auto Repair Shop. It's Sun City's largest and most trusted and been around a very long time. Chuck Nyday opened it in 1982. His son Derek now runs it. Derek, as our second generation in Moke's car repair, they're a little smarter than we. That applies to our kids as well. Derek's a fine guy. When you meet him, you'll understand why I suggest that if you live in Sun City, you go meet with him. He's got your best interest in front of his own, I promise you. Real quick, let me just answer the question that came over.
Uh-huh.
Why am I deviating from the sticker? Here's
right.
The reason. Remember when we used to ride our bikes to the gas station and the tires were flat?
Yes.
Took lots of effort. Once
mm-hmm.
we got the tires aired up, boom, it just ran different.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get better fuel economy. The tire will run cooler at maximum inflation. And, like you well know, when you hit a curb, then a fully inflated tire has a much slimmer chance of having the steel wheel cut the tire. When you hit a pothole, if the tire is, let's say you're well underinflated, mm-hmm. the tire will collapse at the pothole and the wheel will cut the sidewalls. So if you run a fully inflated tire, it runs cooler, better fuel economy. There might be a difference in ride. But as far as safety is concerned, there's no issue. Mike, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. We bought a 2017 Ford Explorer for my wife last August.
Okay.
Up to about 18,000 miles now. I understand that this particular vehicle has an issue with the water pump, and I guess you have to pull the motor to replace the water pump, so it's a fairly expensive repair. I know you're not a fan of extended warranties, but would this vehicle maybe be a candidate for something like that?
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
I know.
Tell me what you...
Well, we always say put money aside each month, what you'd pay for that
extended warranty,
and just use it in case you need it at some point, but... I don't know. Usually we're not a fan of those because there's so much that they don't cover when the people come in and they're so disappointed that they still have to pay this, or the shop wants to send a, you know, used part, or they want to...
No, not the shop, the company.
Or the warranty company wants to send a used part to the shop, and it's just... they're disappointed when they find out what they'll pay, and they'll pay, you know, $35 an hour, and most of us are well above that. So
well over 100.
Right.
And let me dovetail onto that. Mm-hmm. It's the most ridiculous thing in the whole wide world. We've bought one, and we had a water pump in our motorhome fail, and because we didn't have a coolant receipt of a flush we were supposed to have, they voided. They said no. Mm-hmm. We see that every single day. Then they want to pay with a credit card. Then they also want to negotiate the price of the part. Then they want to negotiate the price of the labor. And they don't cover sales tax, shop supplies, or environmental charges. They don't cover Freon and coolant. So you've got all these dynamics. Now, as far as pulling the engine on your car, I can tell you it's an expensive repair. That might be an exaggeration because I haven't seen my guys pull an engine other than one we're replacing. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some tasks that the engine pulled is easier to do. But I could be mistaken, and I also want to tell you, you're in the 80 to 100,000 mile range, maybe 125, before you're going to need a water pump anyway if our averages hold up. And so I'm with Renee, not very often, but I'm with her on this. How much? Just call and ask what the payment is, and then just divide that by, you know, in the next 3 years or 4 years, and then you just put that money into an account. And I can tell you, those that have done it, they've won. And some of them say, I was covered up to 100,000 miles, and I still had all the money. Mm-hmm. I hadn't done anything. Now, it won't cover maintenance either. A friend of mine,
right.
A judge, mm-hmm. just bought a fancy-dancy car. And this is what they did. They have a warranty, like 3 years on the car. And so they wanted to sell him another 3 years. And he had to do it right then. Mm-hmm. So they're going to get to keep your money for 3 years before they have the risk of putting any money out. So he has my cell phone because he sentenced me to jail one time. And
I wish you wouldn't tell people that.
I'm laughing and so are you.
I know.
Can hear Mike laughing.
It's embarrassing.
Just calm your butt down over there, okay? Or I'll turn off your microphone. And he calls me up and he tells me that. And I told him just exactly what I told you, except I used bad words.
1 minute. Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that. You it's so stupid to think you're going to give them $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 that you can't even touch for 3 years, and you don't know if your wife's going to divorce you and take the Explorer anyway.
Oh my!
I'm just saying that there are other things that happen. Yes. Where he won't end up with the Explorer
in the next few years. And I have a Ford Edge, and honestly, somebody did a water pump on an Edge in the shop. And it was really expensive. I couldn't believe it myself. So it's probably similar to the Explorer.
Okay, and probably so. Mm-hmm. The problem with this whole concept, though, is compared to what? I mean, a 283, a small block Chevy and an old Chevrolet, the water
right.
pump and the labor wasn't bad. We've got a lot of water pumps that are north of $1,000.
Right now, yeah.
And that's the part and all the ancillary parts. You got hoses and belts, and you have to take the oil filter off housing, and you got a new gasket for that, and you have to do an oil change now. So there's lots of ancillary stuff in there as well. But, yeah, I don't think I've seen a $200 water pump in 10 years. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, I'll tell you what you can do. You can call my guys and ask for one of the service riders and say, I have Mark's permission. Would you bid the water pump for me? And just tell them you got a 17 and tell them what motor you got. And that will give you the help you need. Mm-hmm. But the water pump's still 80 to 120,000 miles. So, you know. Anyway, that's it. Mike, thank you very much. That was a great question.
Right.
You bet.
Thanks.
You bet. And we're going to take a break, but Bob and Leonard, please stay there because I'm going to get to you, and the next break is 20 minutes long. We'll be back in a minute. 10:44 in the morning. My name's Mark Salem, and real quick, let me tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair. Both of their families have been in the auto repair business since the 60s. Both of their families. So Brian and Thelma are a perfect marriage because both of them have tremendous background in car repair. It's the only shop in Mesa. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and all you have to do is meet Brian or Thelma, and you'll know why I think they're such great people. All righty, we're going to go to the phones. Bob, you're first. How can I help you?
Mark.
Yes, sir.
This pertains to Nissan.
Okay.
Mostly at Altimas. I'm in the business. I buy a lot of them.
Okay.
Is the CVT transmissions in the Nissan as bad as I think it is?
Everybody hates the CVT, and it's because of this. When it fails, it's a lot of money. And when it fails, you're only going to get one from the dealer. So everybody has this, their panties wadded up over this CVT, but in reality it gets better fuel economy, and they're approaching 100, 150,000 miles worth of life. And we are starting to see some major national rebuilders offer those for sale at substantially less money. The labor's the same. It's just the doggone CVT's kind of so new, and Nissan's not like Honda's, and blah, blah, blah. But if my wife wanted a CVT, I would say that's fine. We wouldn't get an extended warranty for it because I know a guy that owns a great shop. But the idea is people complain because it's a price, so they condemn the transmission. And no matter where you go on many of these, you have to buy it from the dealer because they're the only ones that got a rebuilt unit or a new unit. If they don't have a rebuilt, or they say they don't have a rebuilt, then you have to buy a new one, and then you're going to get into some big dollars. But as far as it being any more dependable than the rest, no, it's going to fail. It's going to fail slightly before a normal transmission.
Yeah, I just and I talked to Nissan. I said, why, when there's such a big percentage of these things going bad, between 70,000 and 80,000 miles, sometimes. Why wouldn't they do a recall on something like that?
Well, it's not a safety issue. That's what recalls are all about, safety issues.
All right.
And I want to tell you something. If I had an hour of your time, and if I could talk on the radio for an hour, and I could do it for two, I could give you example after example after example of everybody else having the same problem. There's been all kinds of crappy parts that have been put on new cars that the manufacturers have to backpedal on. So the CVT, and then the CVTs are different transmissions, and some people are not going to understand that they don't shift, and some people may drive them a little different. So the answer to your question is if you called me and said, should I buy a Nissan with a CVT, I would say to you, yeah, I don't think that's the only reason you shouldn't, okay?
But when they go bad, you have to just replace it somehow.
Yeah, yeah, there's nobody that's going to fix it.
There's no fix.
But I want to tell you,
okay,
all of the rest of them are that way. We're not going to go in there and fix it. Now, I have a rebuilder on the domestic side that I'll take the transmission out and send to him. He'll rebuild and give it back to me. I can do that. He can probably do a CVT, but we haven't offered one to him. But in the case of most of the rest of them, you're going to put a new unit or a used, or not a, a new unit or a rebuilt unit back in it. So you're still in the same boat. Got to run, Bob. Thank you very much. Leonard, you're up next.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
You bet.
My problem is with a 2013 Toyota Tundra with a 4.6-liter engine. I recently took it in for its 100,000-mile thing, you know, and I had the fuel injector blown out and the plugs done, the radiator flush, transmission flush, rear end done. But when I got it back, about a week later, you know, I had emptied my tank, and then I refilled it, and I tried to check, you know, how much my gas mileage had gone up. It actually went down. I was getting 16 miles to the gallon, and now then I was barely getting over 14.
Okay.
Then, about a few days or a week after that, I got a service engine light come on. And it was ended up the code was a P106B. Which is an emissions thing, so I took it back to the same guy, and he said that it was some kind of a valve in a pump.
Purge
for my
valve?
Emissions. Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
And, well, he replaced it, and then about 2 or 3 days later, the light came back on. But this time it was with different codes.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if maybe they did something wrong when they blew out my injectors or something? That 100,000-mile thing? Could that be possible?
Okay, was this a chain store, an independent shop, or a dealer?
An independent shop.
Okay, an independent shop did your 100K service.
Right.
Okay. I want to tell you something. You're never going to find anybody I know or like, and you're never going to find in my shop that we sell anything like that at all. That you can't imagine.
Sell?
This flushing of the injectors, flushing of the intake, flushing your wallet. That's what I call it, flushing your wallet. Now, sometimes if you have a bad injector, it's a good idea to flush it to see if you can fix it. The customer needs to know that. You're going to spend $80, $90 to try to fix it. And there's a 50-50 chance it'll clean up and 50-50 chance it won't. This idea of flushing your injectors at 100 or 150 or 50, it just boggles my mind because there's nothing in your owner's manual that says you should do that. It's highly profitable for the shop. And there's so many companies out there that want to sell us the chemicals and we'll put you on our website and we'll tell everybody you're a great shop. Never mind, you got a terrible reputation at the Better Business Bureau. We're going to tell everybody that if they want ABC and they have these national... Oh, boy, am I wadded up about this. The answer to your question is nobody's going to know what's the matter till you get it fixed. No one's going to know. So it's you got to track this down, and somebody's got to fix it, and then we'll know. So my advice to you is give him one more shot at this. Did you have to pay for the first check engine light stuff?
Yeah. Okay. I paid $630 to have that valve replaced.
Did you ask for the old valve back?
I didn't. No.
Shame on you.
You just scared the dogs.
I know. You always ask for your old parts back because the guy fixes the second code and he says it was never this, and you say put it back on. And then if the A code goes away and the B code goes
out.
Yeah. So you want your old parts back. So anyway, I got to run.
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. We lost him again.
Hello?
There you go. You just I think you either go back to him and give him another shot and tell him that I want to test drive this for a while afterwards, or you go to someone else. You only have those two choices. But trying to figure out what it is from on a radio show is not going to work because I would need to do a diagnostic procedure to find out. So I can tell you this much, just because it says it's a purge valve doesn't mean it's a purge valve. Just because it says it's an injector doesn't mean it's an injector. The code tells you what state the problem is in, Ohio, and you got to find the city, Cleveland, and then you got to find the street and the house number. And that's what the diagnostic process is all about. We don't fix cars with codes by just replacing the code. We don't do that. Anyway, got to run, Leonard. Thank you very much. Great question. Brad, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning. Happy Saturday.
Yeah, happy Saturday to you. I'm alive and I'm not in any trouble with anybody that I'm worried about.
All right, I got a 91 Crown Vic, 58,000 miles on it. I picked it up for $1,000, and it's my Saturday cruiser. Runs great, everything works. But at about 35 to 45, I get a little bit of a shudder. It almost feels like the transmission's going in and out, or some type of a miss, but it runs smooth. You just give it a little bit more gas, and it's fine.
Okay.
Two
things.
It's
sparker fuel, and so this is what I want you to do. I want you to manually shift the transmission. So you're going to pull it into low at a traffic light, and you're going to shift it yourself. The question then becomes, is it still there? And I want you to take it to a normal shift pattern, because you're used to that. So drive normal shift pattern. Or before you do it, just figure out what miles an hour it shifts from first to second, second to third, so forth. And then when you manually shift it, do the same thing. The question is it still there? So I'm just eliminating the transmission by this.
Gotcha.
So, and then I want to know if you start off in drive and not overdrive, I want you to start off in drive, does it do it then? And then I want you to back up to third gear and let it shift automatically. And does it do it there? You need a little bit more diagnosis, and you're going to save yourself a lot of money if you just go through those gyrations I just named.
Perfect.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right.
I'll give it a try and call you next week.
That'd be fine. And he's going to call back and tell me I'm right.
Oh, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm. People don't understand that. There's a lot of times I get really close.
You do. I know you get a lot of email that says, hey, you nailed it or whatever.
But it's only as good as the person I'm talking to.
That's right.
You know, if I got some guy with greasy fingernails that's an accountant or worse yet a lawyer, and he's a pretend auto mechanic, then he wants to tell me what to do. And under those circumstances, in the front counter vernacular, okay. We're up at the front counter. As soon as they start telling me what to do, and as soon as they start telling me about YouTube, and as soon as they start telling me about my brother who lives in Cleveland told me to do this.
You get really happy, don't you?
I'd get happy, but here's what I do. I clearly this is not something I want a part of.
Sure.
So normally we quote 75 to 125 for most diagnostic process. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hit him between the eyes with a $350 one. He's going to go away. Right. And he's going to tell everybody I'm really expensive. I don't care. But the idea is it's just a bad conversation. It's right. a bad way to start off a relationship. You don't go to your doctor and tell him that your brother's a proctologist and has, you know, told somebody that you have an ear infection. You know what I mean? Come on. Vic, you know, he's laughing in our ears.
I'm giving you the bad face.
I know you are. I know. There are good examples. They're extreme, but they're good examples.
Okay. Whatever you say.
Oh, gosh. You know, sometimes I regret when you say I want to do radio with me. You know, sometimes I regret that. All righty.
Have I ever said that?
Yeah. Larry Harker's Automotive is at 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's been open since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. If I said this, I said it 1,000 times. Bob is one of the best diagnosticians that I've ever met in my life. He's one of those guys that if you do it in a nice way and go to your extremes to discuss the symptoms, it's like waving a red flag in front of a bull. And he'll usually take it on, as long as you don't tell him about YouTube and your brother in Cleveland. He'll take it on, and he'll give you a spread, and he may have to call you and get more money, but he usually doesn't. And he can fix it. I've seen him pull a rabbit out of his hat that three other shops that I respect tried to. So I've seen him just do magic. Now, there's three or four of us out there that are as good as him, mm-hmm. but he is great. And Ellen runs the front counter, and as far as Bob's concerned, he runs the shop.
That's right.
So you'll get to talk to him if you can get past Ellen. But she'll call Bob to the front. That's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, so if you call now, you can get on, 602-508-0960. Last week, I wasn't paying attention, and I gave the wrong phone number a couple times, and nobody said a word.
Seriously?
Yeah, I was doing the editing of the show later.
Yes.
And I don't know what happened, but Gil must have been asleep.
I do.
He's snoring on us.
Yeah.
And Gil's the one that runs the show. Gil's the one that makes sure that I hit all my marks. Folks, you have to understand that when Gil says that he wants me out at 17 minutes after the hour, he doesn't want it 17:30. He doesn't want 16:10. He wants 17. And then there's 30, and then there's 40, and then 58:50 is the top of the hour. And that's kind of where I'm working at right now. Mm-hmm. It's 58:08, and so I have to talk all the way to 58:50, which is another 40 seconds.
And you have no problem
with that. I'd like to talk about your credit card balances. Can we talk about that for just a minute?
Mine?
Yeah.
No.
Well, it didn't work out really good. Gil, has your wife been mad at you any time in the last week or so?
Gil's on the phone.
Yeah,
he was on the phone, but what did you say?
Gil, has your wife been mad at you in the last day or so?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, on the other side of the break, I want you to tell me why your wife's mad at you. And everybody knows that my wife's mad at me. So, 48, 49, 50, we'll see you.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for sticking with us for the second hour. We're going to be here till 12 talking about cars and cars repairs. 602-508-0960, if you'd like to join us. That's the number you call if you're listening to us on iHeartRadio and you're outside the Phoenix metro area, 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. There's a good shop in North Phoenix on Bell and I-17. It's called Kurt's Auto Repair. He's been around since 1987. He does gas and diesel. But Kurt, and then there's Eric, and I just always mess up that second name, and I'm going to write it down right on my eyeballs. But they're really smart at what they do, and there's three master technicians, and they're in the hierarchy of that shop. So you're going to get three guys on your car under certain circumstances. So, Kurt's Auto Repair is one of my favorite shops. Of course, I have a lot of other favorite shops, but they're a good shop, and I stand behind them and tell you they're a good place. Let's go to the phones real quick, and we're going to talk to Mike. Mike, good morning.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. I have my wife's truck. It's a 2007 Lincoln Mark LT. It's got about 175,000 miles on it. Had the plugs changed at 100. It started doing this. It's mostly highway miles. She goes to work.
Okay.
But it started stuttering, like missing.
Okay.
And I kind of no codes throwing or anything like that. And I went ahead and changed the fuel filter because it was pretty clogged.
Okay.
It corrected a little bit of it, but it's still, when you're stopped and it's idling, you can it runs and you can just little miss.
Okay.
Little miss.
All right, I got a couple.
Like when you run it down the road, same thing too.
Okay. I got a couple of thoughts. A fuel filter that's kind of plugged will shut off the fuel 40, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. And if they're really plugged, you won't go past 30. So if you can run that, I know it's kind of an impossible question to ask about a Ford or a Lincoln Mercury, but if that thing will do 75 miles an hour, it's not a fuel delivery system problem. So we're going to
It'll go 80. It's not a problem. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Your wife drives it at 80? Is that what you're saying?
No, I do.
I opened the door to save you, buddy. You didn't take it. All righty.
She's not listening.
All right. So fuel filter's out of line right now. And actually, you don't really know what to do until you identify what the heck it is. It can be a coil. It can be a small, really short plug wire if it's got coil over ignition. But you said it does it at idle. It's predominantly at idle?
Yeah, and that's when you notice it the most. And it's not all, it doesn't do it all the time. It's just like it runs fine, then all of a sudden it'll go click, 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 and then run. And then another two, three. And I did replace the coils when I replaced the plugs.
Okay, did you do all the coils?
Yep.
Did you do the little
sharp? I probably didn't need to.
Yeah, that was probably money that wasn't well spent. Did you replace the little rubber fuel lines underneath them that call wires? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm just telling you, a coil or one of those ignition misfires is going to be throughout the RPM range. So I don't know what's causing it to idle rough. The EGR valve could be stuck open, and that'll cause it to run rough. You could have a torn air boot between the mass airflow sensor and the air intake. You can have a mismatch between the coolant or the throttle position sensor, the mass airflow, and the idle. There's just a lot of things. You didn't mess with any of the screws on the throttle body, did you?
No.
Okay, good.
No.
Because those all have to be synchronized, and so it's not anything you can do without a significant amount of technology and meters and stuff. So, what I think you should do is you should wait until it throws a code, which will give us some general direction, or number two, work on it, learning how to make it happen. And if you can make it happen, and you pull into the shop and you make an appointment for Wednesday morning at 7:30 when they open, just insist that somebody come out and look at it when you get there, because you know it'll be there when they get there. So, and then, you know, most of us are going to add a little propane to the air intake to see if it's a fuel delivery problem, or maybe we've got an injector that's a little tight, or something like that. But there's a lot of guys out there that will know right away whether it's an ignition miss or a fuel delivery problem, and that's what we have to do first: compression, fuel delivery, air delivery, stuff like that. So it's going to take some diagnostics.
It doesn't seem to affect the performance of the car.
Okay.
So
that question will be answered once you fix it.
Yeah, but it's just irritating. So. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck to you. Thank you, Mike.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Mark, you're up next.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have two related questions. I'm looking at buying a new minivan or a certified pre-owned, and I've had people tell me, oh, it's better always to buy a certified pre-owned because you don't take the depreciation hit. And I don't really know what that means. And I also am interested to know if there's a brand that I should stay away from.
Well, yeah, I need you to narrow it down. I need you to give me like four or five and say, name the first one, the second one, the best one, the worst one, that kind of stuff. As far as a certified used car versus a new one, are we talking about that?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know anything about depreciation. I'm a car guy. I would ask our accountant. I don't know the answer to that question. I can tell you that I do not believe that certified pre-owned means anything.
Okay.
This car is, I know this to be true. the car goes back to the shop, and they write a big list on the car. And either the technician sees enough to write the list and populate the list, or you got some junior guy there that wouldn't know from Shinola. The idea is that the particular shop that's selling the pre-owned or pre-certified cars isn't going to put a bunch of car work in that, and here's why. If you come back and they have to put an alternator in there, or there was a rear main seal, and they're going to be the heroes. So it's rolling the dice. And so you take the car, and you don't have it checked by another shop, what we call a pre-car purchase, or a used car checkover, whatever. You take it to them, and then you go back to ABC dealer, and you say, hey, he says I need to do this. And they go, oh, yeah, we'll take care of that. And you think they're a hero, but they just, you know, they're rolling the dice, and you actually collected yours. So I'm not disparaging all the dealers, but I know that happens in the used car lots and at the dealerships and everybody who sells cars. There's a different procedure with respect to what. How in the world could I sell the car with trade-in value or private party value on the KBB website? How could I do that if I'm going to have to put four tires, front brakes, fix the oil leak, flush the cooling system, and put new wires or new wiper blades on it? How's that going to work? So if you're going to buy a used car, have the garage that's going to take care of it, have them do a pre-purchase inspection. If you're going to buy a new car, I mean, obviously there's benefits to a new car. You know, you're going to have a warranty that's going to take care of the majority of the problems for some time period. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to offer you something. Are you stuck on a minivan on the new?
Not necessarily.
Okay. I'm going to offer this to everybody. I had a friend of mine give me a spreadsheet the other day, and he was looking for an electric car. And so he said, would you look at this? And it's the most detailed spreadsheet I've ever seen in my life. He narrows it down to the license plate fees, the sales tax fees. He's got everything. This thing must be, I looked it over, it must be 10 pages long. And I don't know how many cars he's got on there, but I'm going to tell you, I think there's 30. And he has all the numbers. Now, I got two comments. Number one, he's got this electric car, and he says that he's using 11 gallons of fuel a month. I believe him. He's that kind of a goofy guy. I believe him. Here's what I want to tell you. If you're going to buy something new, you know the sticker on the window?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to buy it for that out the door.
Okay.
And don't tell me that you can't do it, because I'm really proud of my daughter. We needed a new shuttle van, and we decided to go from an Astro van, which was 150 years old, because then that's a commercial carrier. And we went to this Dodge Grand Caravan with electric doors and fancy seats and, you know, all really creature comforts. And it's got a low threshold to get in for some of our elderly customers. So we bought this van, and I said to my daughter, this is what I want you to do. I want you to buy it for sticker. And she says, well, that's crazy, Dad. And I said, no, you try that. So she went out and she looked at Hondas and she looked at Fords and she looked at all those, and she also looked at the Grand Caravan. And she says, no, they've got window tint, they've got desert protection package, they've got this, they've got that, and they're all added. And you say, take it all off. Take the window tint off. Take the desert protection package off. Take the answer's I'll get. And you know what? One of them took the deal. And she came in, and she danced into my office. Her name is Andy. And she tossed the sale paper out across my desk, and she goes, bam. And I said, oh, is this bad news? Are you going to beat me with it? And she says, go ahead and look at it. And then she pulls behind her back. She pulls the sticker out. She had peeled off the window, and she goes, check, and sticker. And I know that can happen. So They got all kinds of money, backdoor money, back-end money, they call it, where if they sell it, they get this and they get that. But I don't care about the window tint and the desert protection package. I don't care about the fancy tires and wheels. Take them all off. I want to buy that vehicle that's represented on that sticker. Now, here's the deal. If you want a copy of this spreadsheet, I have his permission to share it. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com. It is something I've never seen before. I can't tell you. I was in awe when I sat and read this thing. And I said to him, how long did it take you to do this? And he said, It was longer than my wife thought was appropriate. So that means he was working on this, you know, two or three or four or five nights in a row. But Mark at MarkSalem.com, if you're hung up on a minivan, I don't know if he's got anything in there, but it's not car brand specific. He's got all kinds of brands in this spreadsheet. So if I were going to buy something new, this spreadsheet would be the only thing I would look at. This would be it. So I offer that to you and anybody else. Mark at MarkSalem.com.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Oh, so my wife's gone. She's not in here yelling at me. She does that a lot. I'm having to talk quietly because I don't know which part of the house she's in. And I do know her Starbucks is sitting here on the table. And frankly, folks, I don't like Starbucks. I went in there one time and I asked for just black coffee. She says, what? And I said, no, just black coffee. She says, what? And I said, truck driver coffee. And she checked with a couple of people and she came back. She goes, we don't have that. And she says, would you like a coffee with latte? And I said, I don't even know what latte is. All I want is a black cup of coffee. She says, we don't have it. I said, okay. She says, we have some juices over there. Nevertheless, my whole family loves Starbucks, but they don't have what I want. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open. Gil's going to answer, and we'll be right back. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee Salem, and Gil is on the at the other end of the board. He's the one that makes this show. If it's good, it's his fault. No, it's his. It's not really his fault. He gets credit for it. Now,
correct.
I have a question for you. What's that called, that Starbucks cup you got there? How do you order that?
Well, I drink usually a cinnamon almond milk mocha. Or it's not a mocha. It's a I don't even know what it is, cappuccino or something.
So say that again. A cinnamon almond
milk. Milk. Macchiato, that's what it is.
Macchiato.
You put me on the spot, and I can't even think.
Gil, what is it that you order or your wife orders?
I just get a vanilla iced coffee with a half an app.
Okay. Oh. Now, Gil and I were talking, and I said, you know, I said on the air, I don't know where you went, but your Starbucks cup, she's still here. And I told him the story when I went in and asked for black coffee, and they didn't have it. And then she had to ask somebody, and then she came back, and I said, I just want truck driver coffee. They don't have it. Mm. So Gil said during the break, he said, they have the most difficult menu in the whole wide world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me explain to everybody. I'm a cowboy. I've been around when cows have been born. I've been around when daddy horses and mama horses did they thing. I've been around what, and I am not one of the guys that's going to go there. I'm just trying to make sure they don't get really mad.
They probably don't want you there anyway.
And, you know, that's okay
with
me.
And I've been there when cows and horses were born, too, and I still go to Starbucks. So
I know. But
get over it.
It's going to take me like a month to figure out what the seven words are that I want.
You wouldn't like it anyway, dear.
It's
just go in and order a cup of coffee. They do have coffee. But you have to know if you want dark roast, light roast, this roast, that roast.
No.
You know.
I can go to Dunkin' Donuts and get a cup of coffee like that.
Okay, then do it.
Yeah.
And a donut.
Does Alan, my son, does he drink whatever that is?
Yes, he does. I mean, not that exact thing, but he drink
goes there?
Something like that.
He's no longer my son. I can tell you that much right now. He's no longer my son. Mm. All righty. Blackwell Automotive at 40th Street North of Greenway. Tom Blackwell and I are two people cut from the same cloth. We have no filter between our ears and our mouth. Tom's a really good technician. He's a really good guy to take an older car and dress it up nice, but beware of the pricing because whatever your budget is, Tom will tell you it's going to really be three times that much because of you. So Tom Blackwell, and he also does regular cars, mm-hmm. and he's really good at diagnosing regular cars, and he's there every day. So Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway, you can stop by there. Let's go to Ed. Ed, good morning to you.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking the call.
Yes, sir.
I've got a 1998 4Runner with about 200,000 miles on it.
Okay.
It runs really well, but this week I got what I believe they call the pink milkshake.
Okay.
Meaning that the coolant and the AT transmission fluid was mixing.
Okay.
But I think I caught it within a day or two because I checked it, you know, a few days before that, and everything was fine, and I was trying to fix a small leak from an O-ring in the transmission. So I didn't have any problems with it. But so I replaced the radiator. I have changed the coolant, replaced the filter, and replaced the transmission fluid. I didn't do a full flush, transmission fluid flush yet, but I'm planning on changing it a few times over
okay.
the next couple
okay.
weeks.
Okay, what's the question, though?
In the coolant, I'm getting this that pink, sticky, it's like shaving cream, an oil-based shaving cream type consistency in there. And I'm right now I'm running straight water in there because I'm pulling the bottom radiator hose off, trying to flush the system out. Is there okay. some way to get that stuff out of there?
That was a long way to get there. But, yes, we use Joy dishwashing liquid.
In the engine?
Yeah. Oh. He said he's running
just
straight water.
In
so... That's how long of a squirt you use, and you put it in the cooling system, and yeah, it's going to make suds, but it's going to break down the oil, and after you do that two or three times, then there's no other way to get the oil out of the cooling system. Is you're going to have to soap it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we do. I mean, that's the old cowboy.
Squirt it in there, let it run for a day or two, and then drain it out.
Yep, and sooner or later, you're not going to have that sheen on top of the stuff. Now, here's the bad news. The bad news is coolant contaminates the glue that holds the clutch plates together in your transmission. I wouldn't be a bit surprised in the next 20 or 30,000 miles. 200,000 miles, that transmission doesn't owe you anything anyway. But there's a good chance you're going to have a problem. Now, if I were you, I'd go ahead and pay for a flush. What's a flush, tranny flush?
I want to say a couple $100 or something like that.
I think I have a menu here that Andy gave me the other day. A auto full flush, 160 to 200. Now, that's us. Mm-hmm. So I want you to know my price range is right in the middle of the market. So if I'm 160 to 200, there's guys out there at 140 to 230, 250. So I'm priced in the middle of the market. But that's how I would do it. You replace the radiator, but the only thing you haven't really done is soap everything up. Now, this is going to make a mess. So, you know, you've already been draining the radiator and you've got water. You've just been letting the water run out. When we start bringing out the water, it's going to have soap in it and it's going to have some oil in it. And it's going to take you 1,000 miles before. And another thing, you're going to take a turkey baster, and when you take the cap off, the oil rises to the top. Uh-huh. Suck all that out, too. You're going to see oil in your overflow. Suck all that out, too. So this is something... This is something we might charge $300 to get the oil out of your system, and that includes two other stops. So we'll do what we can on the front side, and then you'll be back two times or three times. So, but that's how we do it. Otherwise, you just continue to do what you're doing. I probably use a little bit of antifreeze, maybe a third of antifreeze and two-thirds of water. I'm a little concerned. It was 29 degrees this morning in Payson, and there's more fish dead in the horse's trough.
Yeah. But Phoenix is 60, so I don't know. Right. I mean,
I know. I don't know where he's from. So if he's...
I'm in Phoenix.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's what we do. Okay? All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Ed. Thank you. Gabriel, you're up next.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 2008 Town and Country, and I bought it when it had 100,000 miles on it, and right now it has 150,000, and I don't know what kind of a service that I need to do.
Okay, that's easy. You're just going to get your owner's manual and look at it, and at 100, and actually at the 150,000 mile mark, you can use the 75,000 service interval. So you could look at 75, and that's going to be what it's at 150. But if your manual goes to 150, it'll tell you everything you need to know. I know there's going to be lots of fluids. So.
Oh, okay. Do you have a price range that?
No, I'm not that good. And besides, I don't know a lot of variables. But I'm thinking it's going to be coolant. If you haven't done it already, it's going to be transmission fluid, power steering fluid. It might be brake fluid. It might be hoses. It might be belts. It might be a timing belt. I don't know. But your owner's manual will give you all that information. All righty.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. 150,000 miles, his Town and Country van. Mm-hmm. Bought it at 100, 150 now, so he's done all right.
Yeah,
he's done all
and right. He may not know what's been done at 100,000 miles because that's kind of one of the bigger stops too. So
you're exactly right, mm-hmm. but I thought about that.
Yeah,
and
you always think ahead, don't you?
I do. I've been doing this for a long time. I've been on the radio since 1988. So the first 10 years was without you.
Correct.
And so anyway, we're going to take a break. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We hang up on people who want to vote on Mark or Renee or who's better about car repair. We're not taking that vote, right, Gil? Yep.
No.
He said that's right. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Renee Salem sitting here next to me, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange is on 40th and Washington. Phil's been around. He knows Fred Flintstone, and he worked on one of the first automatic transmissions that the Valley ever saw. The guy has a fundamental knowledge of how transmissions are supposed to work. In the old days, we used pressure, and we opened and closed valves with mechanical devices, and we used vacuum to help shift the transmission. Today, everything is different. We have controllers. We have solenoids. We have things that move left and move right to shift you from first to second. Everything's electronic. Speed sensors and motor has a lot of input, so if it sees your foot go to the throttle like my wife usually drives all the time, it'll go to all the way to the floor, then the transmission will know how to respond. It'll drop down a gear or it'll do whatever it needs. So
I'll just ignore that comment.
That's
because
fine.
We know who is on the floor all the time.
Okay, 1968, Phil's been around, and he's a good guy, so if you'd like to. Okay, I'm going to tell you a story. This is Mark Salem Storytelling Time. We went in, we're working for a family who passed, husband and wife, and they're friends of ours. So we're working to handle their trust and stuff. So we had to meet some of the family over at this storage area, and we got there early. So we walked in, and folks, I have a very patriotic truck. So the first thing the guy does in this big, huge storage in North Scottsdale, he said, I love your truck. And I said, well, you know, thank you. And he goes, are you a veteran? And I said, no, I'm not. But the truck is in honor of veterans because 2 weeks before I was to be inducted, Nixon called the draft, and the Vietnam War was over. So that truck is in honor of all the veterans that are older than me that fought that war. They fought in my place. So we're talking. So all of a sudden, he stops, and he goes, I just saw your hat. And I said, well, is it crooked, or is it dirty, or what? He goes, what's your name? And I said, it depends. It depends on whether you like that shop or you don't like that shop. And he goes, you're Mark Salem. I recognize your voice. Is this true so far?
It's true.
Okay. So we're talking about a whole lot of things, and he says, you know, I've been a Chevrolet guy all my life, but I've been thinking about a Dodge truck. And I said, well, that's what that is. And he goes, I know. He says, how do you like your Dodge truck? And you can now finish the story because your discussion is...
Well, you always brag about how fast your truck is, how many people you beat, and how fast you go up the mountain. And it's really embarrassing because okay. I'm just hoping someday you're going to get caught.
First of all, you don't know. See, this is the difference between men and women. I'm facing him, okay?
Right.
And I'm telling him my truck will do 100 miles an hour, but you don't see me winking. And he knows when I'm winking.
Mark.
Okay? So I tell him I've never been beat in this Dodge truck, and I'm winking. And I got my back to you.
No.
So this is the way guys do it. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
This is the way guys, he knew damn well that that truck won't do 140 miles an hour. And so do you.
No, I don't. Because I've been in it when it's done that much.
We were on a long road. Nobody else was on the road. And the throttle stuck, and it took me a while to get my boot out from on the throttle.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So anyway, I'm going to say all the veterans out there are special to me because the Vietnam veterans are especially special to me because they fought the war in my place.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you another story. We were in Walmart. We were at Walmart in Payson. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman walked up and he goes, you know, I like your car, but he says in the back window, it says, God bless Vietnam vets. And I said, yes, sir, it does. It's an honor of the Vietnam people. And he goes, why not all vets? And I said, well, this was my error. And these are the guys. I think you'll agree these guys didn't come home with the reception that everybody after them came home with.
Or before them, really. Do you think?
Yeah. Well, before and after. You know, Vietnam was Jane Fonda's time to be a big shot, and the World War II guys, the Korea guys, they came home to celebrations, and certainly after Vietnam. But the Vietnam guys, I think everybody agrees that they were different. So he says, well, I still don't think that's appropriate. I think you should say God bless all vets. And then I said to him, well, I appreciate that you have an opinion, and thank you for the compliment on my truck. But in response to you think I should change it, I said it's important to understand it's my truck.
You might have said a few more words in
there. I used a bad word in there. Okay.
But the gentleman that we met yesterday, too, he was in the Vietnam War. And then his son, he was telling us, has been away for 3 years. And he's coming back on the 27th of this month. So he was really excited about that.
And he also said that when he was in Vietnam, he was stationed at one time in England. Mm-hmm. And his son just got assigned to the same duty station as he had.
Right.
So they were excited. And I said to him,
1 minute.
I make a suggestion to you. You probably have pictures of you while you're in England when you were 20 years old. And he goes, I do, by the River Thames or whatever the heck that is. And he was describing a couple of places. I said, you should have your son, you should send a picture to your son and say, try to get the same picture for the second generation.
Yeah.
And he thought I was the most brilliant person in the whole wide world. So my question to you is why don't you?
Because I know a lot more about you than he does.
Than he does.
In an hour.
Yeah. So anyway, that truly did happen. Yeah. And people do recognize my voice, and I don't care about that. If you're going to recognize our voice and we're having a quiet dinner at the bar that Renee patronizes, then maybe it's just a short conversation, and I'll shake your hand, and we'll move on. And how do you like the way I threw you under the bus there?
Yeah, you usually do.
Okay, well, everybody understands that our names within our circle, with our kids and our employees and everybody, I'm known as Jack the Ripper. You're known as Snow White. For all of our life, the kids, you gave them yeses and I gave them noes. Is that true?
Yes, that's true.
Okay. So
most of the time.
Yeah. All right. 602-508-0960. We're not going to comment on Mark's personal life. We're going to talk about cars. So if you have a car question, then 602-508-0960. And by the way, if you want a spreadsheet on all the newer model cars that's so detailed, it's down to, you know, he got the license fees, the sales tax. He has the cost per 100,000 miles. He has all kinds of fancy stuff. Mm-hmm. So send me an email at mark@marksalem.com, and I will send you a copy of that. It's something you've never seen before, and how I know that is because I've never seen anything like this before. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited about it because he's going to let me share it.
That's nice, yes.
But he says, you can't leave my name on there, and I said, I won't. Mm-hmm. I won't. But I know who he is, and right. I know that it's a
you
valid
know where
person.
To find him.
That's right,
yes.
602-508-0960. We'll be back. Forty-four minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and here's something you can do for me. We're sitting in the studio up north, and there's a woodpecker into this one tree. Now, don't tell me about a BB gun or a pellet gun because they're protective. But if you have something that you do to keep woodpeckers off your trees or your house or, you know, stuff like that, then mark@marksalem.com, let me know. Because we've got this one woodpecker that comes back all the time, and I've wrapped the whole tree in screen stuff. Yeah, and he still pecks through the screen door. He's just an adamant son of a gun. You know what I was saying about chili powder? I'm going to find out the next time he has a hole going, and I'm going to put chili powder in there, and maybe I'll drive him back to where he came from.
Good idea.
All righty, Mike, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark and Renee. My wife and I both enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Real quick. In reference to that woodpecker, have you ever tried tanglefoot?
No.
What is that?
Okay, it's a real sticky substance, and you can get it at most any hardware store.
Okay,
they get it on their feet, they stick to everything.
Okay, now I'm going to write it down. Tell me what it is again.
It's tanglefoot.
Okay,
it comes in a caulking tube. You use a caulking gun to put it on.
Okay.
I had woodpeckers in my sorrel.
Oh.
And I put that around the holes where they were digging, and what happens, they get it on them, and it's the most, you don't want to get it on you because it's the most stickiest stuff I've ever used.
Hey, you know, Mike, I'm going to test it on my wife first because if I can hold her feet in the barn for a little while and help me, then it's tangle, like if your shoelaces are tangled, so it's tangle foot.
It's called Tanglefoot.
Okay. All right. I'm on it, buddy.
And it doesn't kill them, or it doesn't, I mean,
oh,
it
no,
just...
No, it won't hurt them other than they get it on them. And, they, you know, if they try to light on anything with their feet again, they, uh-huh. they automatically stick.
Huh.
Maybe I could get one of them to stick in the water tank.
No.
Okay, okay. All
they're
right.
so pretty, but they're so, you know, a nuisance.
They're
yeah.
destructive. All righty. Have you got a car question, or did you talk to me?
Well,
you...
I've got a classic truck. I've got a 1990 F-150, and
okay.
it's got 86,000 original miles. I'm original owner.
Boy.
And I was out yesterday, and it's got the dual fuel tanks on it.
Okay.
And I was out yesterday, and I switched tanks. And when I got back home and turned the vehicle off, I can hear the fuel pump running in one of the tanks.
Okay.
And I switched to the front tank, and I can hear the other fuel pump running. So I had to disconnect the battery to keep the pumps from running. Everything's turned off. The engine's off. The key's off. And the pumps are still running when I hooked the battery up.
Did you flip that switch back and forth while they were making noise to see if it made any difference?
No, I haven't tried that
okay.
yet. I thought maybe that switch has gone bad.
Well, I'd have to look at a wiring diagram. You're talking about something I've never heard about before, but I tell you what, there's a Ford guy that works for me that probably is rolling over in his chair right now because he knows the answer. But the tank switch in your 90, I'm going to guess... In your 90, flips both the gauge and a switching valve underneath.
That's correct.
Okay. So if and when it does now, there also could be this other device that can switch from tank to tank. But what bothers me the most is the pumps are running, which means we've got some kind of a circuit that's down. But when you flip to the switch to the other tank, did you have fuel being delivered from the other tank?
I'm sure I did. You know, I didn't try to start it up. You know, I just I heard the one pump running, like I say, when I got out of the truck, and then I switched to the other tank, and the other pump kicked on too. So I said, okay. Well, you know, it can't be a pump. There's got to be another problem somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a fuel pump relay there, and we could have the relay, but I don't know if there's one or two relays. The real key here is both pumps are running. So you took the gas cap off. You stuck your ear neck. Well, you probably had your wife take the gas cap off, stick her ear right there in the filler neck, and tell you that she could hear the pump running on both sides. Now, here's what I want you to do. Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you figure that out, I want you to tell me how it is. I also want you to send me your email address and a phone number for you, because when I get back to the shop on Monday, I'm going to hit Eddie up about this. And I think we have an 80% chance he's walked this dog before. And so I'm going to tell you what we did to one F-150 that fixed it. I'm not going to guarantee you yours is the same, but you just send me an email with your phone number, your name, and all that jazz, and I'll talk to Eddie on Monday, okay?
You can stop right there. I'm an antique. I'm 80 years old, and I don't have a computer.
Doesn't do email.
Oh. All right. Fair enough. Call the office, Salem Boys Auto. Can you write down the number right now?
Got a pen, go.
480-598-1234. 480-598-1234. You're going to ask for my daughter, Andy, A-N-D-I.
Okay.
Or you can ask for my son, Alan. Either one of them can handle it. So, all right. Well, thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much for the Tanglefoot key. I'm going to go out, and there's an Ace Hardware up here. I'm going straight to there after I get done with it. Keith, you're up next.
Hi, Mark and Renee.
Hello.
I like your show. I have a 2016 Ram 3500 dually regular cab work truck with a gas engine, 6.4 liter V8. And I use it to tow a 38-foot travel trailer. It has about 30,000 miles on the truck.
Okay.
And I'm pulling about 11,000 pounds load for vacation.
Okay.
And it has a 410 rear end. I have, it's still under factory warranty, and I've experienced two issues towing the most minor one, up in the mountains. When I get above like 8,000 to 8,500 feet, the radiator fan comes on and basically just stays on all the time until I get back to lower elevations.
Okay.
It'll never stop running whether I'm towing or not, and it's roaring because that's a big fan on that engine.
Okay, are you sure it's not a fan clutch or is it an electric fan?
It's a fan clutch.
Okay. All right. I think what I want you to do before we go fixing something, I want you to go out first thing in the morning, and I want you to rotate the fan blades with the key in the truck in your pocket so your wife doesn't go in there and start it up on you. And so I want you just to rotate the fan blade. There should be some tension, but it should not be locked up. And it'd be something where you push on the blade, and it'll move an inch or two. That much tension. I don't want it to spin 6, 8, 10 inches, and I don't want you to push it an inch and have it stop immediately. Okay? I'm not real concerned about this problem because at 8,000 feet and you're pulling 11,000 pounds, and I own a 2012, but I got a diesel. Some of what you're talking about, I've experienced. What I'd really want you to do at that 11,000, when you're up there, 8,000 and north of that, I'd like you to pull off the side of the road, have something to eat, and then come out and drive it. Let's let it have a chance to cool off and see if...
It does it even if I go out and start it cold in the morning and I've disconnected the trailer and go drive around at that elevation. It seems to just be caused by the elevation on
that. I've never seen that before. I would have bet that you would have said, no, it doesn't do it first thing in the morning. So under the circumstances, I know that that's a very expensive fan, but you have warranty on it. And I think you should go in and let them have a chance to fix it. But the most important part I want you to do is you be adamant this has to do with altitude. Now, they may say to you, hey, Keith, even if we put a new, brand new Dodge Ram 3500 gas motor fan on this, if it's still 8,000 feet, this one's going to do it too. And you say, let's try it. Why don't you put a new fan on that and let's try it. And I'll drive it and I'll let you know how well you did. That's what I
did. I got one other issue with this thing.
Okay.
In tow haul mode, it's an automatic. I found that pulling this amount of weight to be sort of useless. Most of the time I shift it on my own with electronic shift button.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens, and it, to me it's almost dangerous for the engine, is say I'm going up I-17 pulling this load, and I get to the top and I'm going north and I'm going to descend to Camp Verde.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it in tow haul mode.
Okay.
And I'm in fifth gear or fourth gear on the shifter.
Yeah.
It will... When I let off the gas, it'll go away as it starts speeding up with that weight pushing it, and then it will downshift automatically. I can't control it. It will downshift, and the engine will jump up, and you can't even feel it. You can hear it, because with that much weight, it doesn't slow the truck down at all.
Okay.
And
Wait a minute. I got some questions to ask you.
4,500, 5,000 RPM, and if I put the brakes on and go down more, then it'll try to shift into first gear. And so I've learned the hard way, and I cannot get it out. If I can turn off tow haul mode with that weight pushing it, I can put it in drive, back in drive. It will not come out of that once it's locked up.
Okay, okay. Okay. There's so many questions I have because of all the stuff that you've said. The first thing I want to ask you is, are you 100% sure you're not turning on what's that called on the button on my dash? The something exhaust brake or some kind of a braking? You're pushing the tow haul button and that's all it is?
Yeah, because it's a gas.
I understand. I was just... It's a situation where I think that what you're kind of describing is kind of normal. It's not uncommon. Now, here's what fools me is I don't know why it's overheating on the downhill slide. I don't. And now, keep in mind that the truck should run between half and three quarter. Is the overheat north of three quarter or not?
No, it's not. This is not overheat. It's RPM.
No, I thought you said it started to overheat on the downhill.
No.
Okay.
As I'm going down the mountain, say I'm going down to Camp Verde,
it
downshifts into a lower gear.
Okay, I got that. I got that. I don't know what to tell you. I think you're going to have to read your owner's manual, because I think that the downshifting is something that they're doing for you in the tow haul mode. I think if you went down the hill, if you climbed it at 60 and all of a sudden you're going down the hill at 70, I'm not quite sure the computer's not going to downshift you whether you like it or not. And the 5,500 RPM is probably still not close to the red line, and 5,500 RPM in a gas motor doesn't bother me at all. Read your owner's manual first. Read your owner's manual first. And I'm going to try, the next time I'm hauling horses, I'm going to try what you said. If you'll also send me an email to mark@marksalem.com, then I'll put you in the loop. But I understand what you're saying. You're concerned about the red line, the high RPMs, and the downshifting. And I think I can find an answer for you. But I've got a diesel, so I'm not going to use the exhaust brake. I'm going to use the tow haul mode, because I think we share the same transmission or a model number of the same transmission. So I'll do what I can for you. But right now I'm not too worried about what you told me. I'm not worried about the higher RPM.
But going to first gear, that sounds way too low.
Depends on when he started.
Yeah.
If he slowed it by the brakes down to 20 miles an hour, it may drop a gear. It depends. It's not going to do it from 50 miles an hour. He's not going to drop into first gear. No question about that. And thank you for your truck knowledge, Mrs. Salem.
You're welcome. And I drive your truck too, you know.
Yeah, at 140 miles an hour?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's your job.
Okay. Anyway, 602, nope, we don't have time for callers. mark@marksalem.com if you want to ask a question. Year, make and model, mileage, and then describe the symptoms to me. That's kind of important.
1 minute.
And if you want a good repair shop and one that Mark Salem puts his personal stamp on, then go to marksalem.com. You can go there for FAQs. You can go there for the best car repair shops. And you can also go there to hear any of our old shows, and I cut the commercials out of them. Yeah. So we have all of our old shows. This one will be up in the next day or so, but we have all of our old shows on the website, and you just go click on Radio Media, I think is the link, and you can listen to all of them. And like I said, I've cut the commercials out. So instead of being 2 hours, it's like an hour and 40 minutes or an hour and 30 minutes or something like that. Anyway, drive safe. Don't develop any road rage. And here's the thing I'm asking you to do. If you're on the freeway and it's all stacked up and someone lets you in to a lane, can you just roll your window down and wave at them and say thank you? I can't tell you how many times people smile when I do that, because I practice what I preach. So try that and see what happens. God bless you. Wear your seatbelt.